Welcome back. The word luck is interesting to me in these trade reports, in how, like, were the Bills lucky to make the DJ Moore trade? I don't know. Maybe they would have been better off without it. One can debate that. Were the Sabres perhaps lucky that Colton Parayko said no? Here's someone who I think would tell us yes to that question. Travis Yost. Travis, did you really go through yourself and compile this list of names of people that have worked for the Bills and Panthers? I know a guy in sales who you could add to it if you want. Or did you copy this from something?
No. In the age of AI now, someone just gently pointed out to me, like, hey, you could probably just ask a chatbot this, and they'll figure it out pretty quick. And sure, the day is long. We've not only got an answer, there's 49 names, by the way. And since 2017, 49 previously existing Carolina Panthers front office coaches or players have subsequently made their way to Buffalo. So the next one will be number 50. DJ Moore is number 49. Which, does that make John Fox 48? I'm losing track.
All these years growing up and living in Western New York, I always knew that people left Western New York for places like Charlotte. Now the Bills are doing their best to reverse that over the last decade. Well, let's hear your take on this trade before we get into the Sabres, Travis. The main reason for our calling you this time, as always. Do you like it? Can you defend it?
I can defend it. I don't know. I guess I can defend it. I don't know if I like it. Here's what I will say. It's a very nuanced trade in that the Bills obviously are in this pretty significant pressure cooker to upgrade the wide receiver room and effectively immediately, right? I mean, they cannot go into September without really overhauling the wide receiver room, but also they made such a broad organizational change that everyone knows that a lot of the investment this year, like it or not, 10th year in a row, is going to be on the defensive side of the ball. And in many respects, you know, you could throw your hat and say, how many years have we invested in the defense to watch the offense come up just short a little bit here? But they really have overhauled through the coaching changes, bringing in Jim Leonard. Like, you know, they're going to overhaul a lot of what that defense looks like. They're going to need capital and draft picks to do that. And so I think it made a lot of sense for them to look around the league and see what is out there for a plug-and-play veteran. And, you know, I've seen some criticism of, you know, DJ Moore doesn't really bust his proverbial butt on every single route, this, that, and the other. He had a down year. But, like, this is exactly the type of player that you try and buy on a one-year, you know, a player who's had a great career, who always flashes. He's had one down year. To me, that's a reasonable, like, can we buy low candidate. So when I saw the trade announced, and I'm like, oof, knowing that DJ Moore has got this massive contract, even with some sort of restructuring, I was like, okay, well, I assume the comp is going to be pretty thin because you've really let the Bears off the hook here. The Bears have this DJ Moore contract as expensive as it is long, and they hit on a couple of younger receivers to the point where they need this capital now to look, you know, Chicago, we've already heard them rumored to be interested in Max Crosby, a couple other names. They're going to need money and cap flexibility to do that. So I was assuming, hey, look, this will be a pretty thin comp, and then I'll like the deal. But when it came out that it was a second-round pick, and I get that the Bills get a fifth-round pick back, they paid a pretty big premium to get a pretty good number two wide receiver who's got a lot of term on that deal. And, yes, he is the best receiver Allen has had since Diggs. I don't even think that's debatable. But they paid a pretty big premium to do so. The only thing I would say, and I'll end on this, I get that a lot of the incremental or a lot of remaining investment's going to be on probably on the defensive side of the ball. They cannot be done with the wide receiver room, and maybe that's an easy thing to say because it would seem foolish and unlikely that they would stop here. But this kid has to be one of likely two or even three moves to that wide receiver room. I would still hope that one of their first couple picks is used on a receiver here.
Well, I would be blown away if that were their first round pick. They're always, you know, more trades that can happen. But after today with their holes, I can't imagine they're doing that. Maybe in round three. Otherwise, you better cross your fingers. I mean, I think it's completely reasonable, like you do, to want to do that. But, I mean, you've got to nail it. And they've done that with, you know, Shakir isn't elite, but that's a win of a draft pick. Gabe Davis was also a win of a draft pick, day three. You could hope for Puka, somebody like that, but I think that's probably got to be where this happens. now, and you know the odds are not great.
I will say two things there too, right? You really need three positions: receiver, linebacker, edge. Because of the trade now to the second round pick, it seems like, I agree with you, it seems likely they're going to go best player available based on fit between backer and edge. Maybe more likely edge since it's more of a premium position. But even you know, you're kind of looking at the stars trying to figure out how the board's going to fall. I would say that, you know, if nothing else, this team has shown that they can patchwork a linebacker room. I mean, they did it last year. They've done it a couple times now. But, boy, it doesn't leave me very – like, I could see a very – maybe even the base case scenario is they invested a wide receiver, they improved the defensive line again, but they're super thin on linebacker and are scrambling around for veterans. I could see that being the weak part of the defense once again and then next year.
With Travis Yost of TSN, one of our favorite, if not the favorite, hockey analyst of this show, the NHL trade deadline is tomorrow. So enough football for now. Travis, in your I know the answer. In your opinion, did the Sabres get off the hook by Colton Parayko not waiving his no-trade clause?
Yes, and I want to be very nuanced in my answer too here, because I don't want to say I caught flack, but a good healthy level of pushback of why don't you want to trade for an Olympian top four defender after, you know, we're in this near two decade playoff drought. He clearly improves the team. What are you talking about, Trav? And it's like, pause right there. Colton Parayko makes the Sabres better tomorrow, unequivocally. There's no doubt about it. But if you've watched Parayko this year, there is a, in my opinion, an interesting question about, are we starting to see a slowdown in an otherwise uber-talented, potentially Hall of Fame-level defenseman who's now 32 years old, who's been dealing with intermittent back issues this year, and you'd like to believe those are temporary. I think the latest report was it's intermittent back spasms, whatever the case is. But when you watch St. Louis, and I wholeheartedly acknowledge that the environment in the Blues and how bad they've been has likely sunk Parayko, because even superstars can get caught up in the muck on otherwise really bad teams. And I still think Parayko has a few years left. But this is a player on the wrong side of 30 with a very large cap hit that the Sabres were going to trade not one, but effectively two first-round picks for, to add a position that I know they want a right-shot defenseman. And I think they do, in some respects, need a right-shot defenseman if you start thinking about him in the perspective of, is this a fringe playoff team or a team that can actually win in the playoffs? I think this is a team that can win in the playoffs. So the premium or the value proposition for chasing this type of player is elevated, and I recognize that. But they were giving a pretty significantly expensive package for Parayko when I didn't even think Parayko was the best fit or even a top two fit from the Blues lineup to if Buffalo was really sitting in the driver's seat as a buyer. All of the talk in the last week about Robert Thomas, and I get it, fans and analysts, doesn't matter what, coaches, doesn't matter, you can never fall in love with an idea, and it's not clear with 24 hours still to go if Robert Thomas was an idea or a loudly talked about idea. It seems like it was between the Blues and Sabres, even though reports indicate it's chilled. But he is really what the Sabres need, which is a pretty talented middle six center who provides insurance down the middle of the lineup behind Tage Thompson. And, by the way, provides insurance for a player like Josh Norris, who I like Josh Norris, but you do have a couple of players on this roster who have been in and out of the lineup for durability concerns. I think the acquisition price for a Thomas would be thinner than a Parayko, and I think he's more productive where he's at in his career right now on a relative basis than Parayko is. So, you know, I look at, and by the way, I said top two because to me, the number one player on my trade board, even when Breadman was available, and I'm not saying he's a better player, I thought he was the most interesting, based on the likely price to acquire, he might be the best buy that you can find, and he's got a longer-term contract, and he's a winger. But Jordan Kyrou on the Blues, too, is another player who, if I'm the Sabres and I'm like, man, we can get rolling at 5-on-5. Like, that's been true for 2.5-3 years now. It's remarkably true here. How do I even fortify further the middle six? Like, if I could simulate a trade package where the Sabres invested several current picks and future assets for a Thomas and Kyrou combo and added that salary, there would be some serious financial wrangling in the years to come and figure what it means for Alex Tuch, a couple other guys on the roster. But in my opinion, that's the type of trade that actually elevates Buffalo into, can they win the Eastern Conference now? I don't know that Parayko moves the needle in the same way, and I'm sympathetic to the idea, and I do like the player, but they were giving up quite a bit for a guy who, at least I think it was fair to say, there are questions about. I recognize he's a fantastic defensive defenseman and still a very good one today, but what does his game look like to now and over the next 18 months? I don't know that it was as convincing as it might be for a couple of these other younger players out there.
Okay. What's the difference? I got about 3 minutes, Travis, if you do. What's the difference between making the playoffs in the East this year and making a run? Isn't it pretty flat?
I'd say so. I think a lot of it comes down to team avoidance. I think there's two teams, if you're the Sabres, that you probably don't want to play if you have your pick, and that's the Hurricanes, obviously, and the Lightning. And I think the Sabres can play with both of these teams. And quite frankly, I think there's an argument, depending on what Tampa Bay does. Let me just say this. I'm very curious to see what the Lightning do in the next 24 hours because, I mean, they've been connected to Blake Coleman, a couple other names. I don't know how much they can reasonably add, though, with their cap situation. I think Carolina is always going to remain one of the league's, you know, preeminent teams. They've been one of the most winning teams the last 6-7 years. It's no different this year. They actually have the makeup of a team that can skate. They're one of the few teams that go 3-4 lines deep, 2-3 pairings deep. And when the Sabres play against the Carolina team, it hasn't always been true, but that's one of the few teams in the league that you can look at if you're the Sabres and say, yeah, they can not only play with us 5-on-5, they might be a little better than us. But that list is getting shorter and shorter by the week. I think the path to winning the East really comes down to, can you only just play one of those teams? Can you get some fortune in the other division and see Carolina bounce early and you only have to get through Tampa? Or maybe someone else takes care of Tampa. Montreal's a pretty live team in that division as well. But playing both those teams certainly makes the road a little bit harder. But if we've seen anything from the Sabres this year, they're resilient, which is crazy to say. They're one of the hottest teams in the league, which is also crazy to say. And they're likely going to be buyers in the next 24 hours. We don't know what that name is yet or if he has a no-trade clause. But it seems likely that this team will be better, not worse, one day forward. So, yeah, I think there's every reason to be optimistic about where the Sabres are right now and where they're headed into April.
One thing we know about this Eastern Conference field, no Patrick Mahomes, so that's open. You don't have to worry about going through him. Travis, if you can, in like 2 minutes or less, what do you have a thought on how the story got out with Parayko before he had decided on his future? To me, it's interesting. I think we might have some of the same sensibilities about how the insider machine works. And I wonder if, like, the agents were in play here. There's discussion online today about whether this was done to put pressure on the player. And I think that that's logical because he can look bad if he says no.
This stuff only gets out for a handful of reasons at best, and one of them absolutely is to apply pressure. I don't blame the insiders who are reporting this stuff because they're down line from this information. Like, you can yell at these guys all day long. I work with a few of them, right? Like, you can scream until you're blue in the face. They're recipients of information. They're sitting on this information. It's not a trade secret. It's not a state secret. This is real NHL news. And just because a GM of a team says, hey, we're making this trade, you got 24 hours to decide if you're going to waive, that doesn't mean that's not going to hit the news wire. And to your point, by the way, it is worth underlining here, this is not a one-off with Parayko. It happened with Tyler Myers and the Detroit Red Wings just the same. And Myers eventually said, no, thank you, Detroit, ends up in Dallas. So, like, there's I think this is a bit of a new wrinkle that the league, the front office, the agents, and the insiders kind of as an aggregate are all dealing with. But I think so. I think some real learning lessons were handed out this week because multiple times news got out in front of the actual trade being completed. The trade had to be walked back. And by the way, the damage that does to the guys who didn't know they were being traded, but all of a sudden are being traded, but now they're not being traded. Boy, whether it's the Sabres, the Red Wings, any other team for that matter, it's not just about the guys like Parayko who have the decision to say, I'm not interested in waiving. It's prospects and young players and even rostered players who are saying, wait, you were trying to trade me? I don't know how that goes around in the locker room, but it can't go well.
Well put, as always. Travis, great to talk to you again. Enjoy deadline day.
Take care and tell Bulldog to get better. I don't know what's going on around Western New York.
It's flu B and some different. You've had your experiences as we've had in my house too. It's that I was feeling maybe it's if you're superstitious, this would be my fault. Like a couple of weeks ago, I haven't gotten sick yet, and he and I both for the last week or so have kind of been back and forth. But anyway, we'll get through it. Sal Capaccio coming up at 5. This is Mike Shope on WGR.